When the historian's ideological bias distorts or ignores evidence from the past, a bad kind of revisionism emerges.
Dr. Mark Kaltoff of Hillsdale College, talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
It masquerades as honest history. Such revisionism needs to be exposed and dismantled. It undermines proper understanding of our world. It has been said those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. In this case, failure to expose bad revisionism means that those who do not know the past are condemned to suffer at the hands of biased ideologues who claim they do.
You can meet and hear Dr. Mark Kaltoff making the case against revisionist history at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Our Democratic colleagues, when they ask about Roe versus Wade, now have in mind a right that extends beyond the pregnancy itself.
The Pope has done what he can to shift Catholicism's formal public attitude toward a lot of stuff associated with the sexual revolution.
One of the reasons why evolution as an ideology and a mythology has been so powerful in our day is because it gives a way of thinking about death that's good.
Well, Kelly and I found out we're from different religions.
I thought you and Kelly were both Lutheran.
Oh, well, that's what I thought. Turns out she's Lutheran Church of America. I'm Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Kindergarten teachers from Baltimore love listening to Issues, Etc.
Well, changing the catechism of the Roman Catholic Church is no small thing. It's a big thing, in fact. It can happen only, I imagine, by what, church council, or, as is the case in the news recently, a papal statement that something's going to change. The something is the church's teaching on the death penalty, the change. Some are arguing it's huge. Some are arguing that it isn't that big. But is this really a story about Pope Francis' statement? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 2nd of August. We're going to be talking about media coverage of Pope Francis' declaration against the death penalty in all cases. Terry Mattingly will be our guest. A little bit later, Mark Tooley joins us, president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about a Religion News Service interview with six newly elected female bishops in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Their church is in a precipitous numerical decline. They hardly seem to notice, and they seem to be calling for more of the same. Mark Tooley says they're doubling down. Then we'll spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer, an hour or two of Issues, Etc. Part two of our series with him on prophets and the divine tribunal. We'll talk about the judgment seat of God today, Psalm 50 and the prophet Amos. You can join us with questions or comments over the next 2 hours. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address, @issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about media coverage of Pope Francis' declaration on the death penalty, so much in the news today, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
It's appearing every place. It's on the pages of the New York Times and all major news outlets. It will be probably the lead, if not the lead story, in much of cable coverage, if they can take their mind off of President Trump for a few moments this evening. But is this really a Pope Francis story?
That's an extremely interesting question. And the only way to answer it is to start off with another question. Do you trust Pope Francis? If you trust Pope Francis, then this is a fairly predictable story based on the statements that had been made over in recent decades by people like Saint Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict himself. So you have people that were considered conservatives have said over and over, the death penalty should be done away with. They are glad to see that more people are doing away with it. But the question is, did they set up an actual doctrinal change in whether the death penalty was, under certain circumstances, a moral option? Now, it's very clear that they think that the death penalty in the modern era is no longer necessary. It's also clear that they thought that it was morally corrupt, especially in situations shaped by wealth and by racism. So you have a lot of relevant material related to St. Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI. So here's my question. Is this just another chance for journalists to dance with Pope Francis? Because, as I put it in a post today, have you ever noticed that what Pope Francis says gets a lot more coverage when it agrees with the New York Times editorial page than when it clashes with the New York Times editorial page? And, of course, I'm using the New York Times editorial page as a symbolic shrine of kind of journalism progressiveness. In other words, our journalists tend to write about Pope Francis when they're happy with what he says, and then they don't write about him very much when he says things that they don't like. For example, his incredibly strong words against transsexualism and the gender confusion of our age, which he sees as a kind of new colonialism of Hollywood and other powerful forces. So, you can cover this story in a positive way, but it all depends on whether you trust Francis to have built on the thought of John Paul and Benedict. Now, since I wrote my post, and right up front I admit in my post that my post is influenced by the fact that I have always been a complete opponent to the death penalty here in the United States. What Francis has done, however, is make a universal human doctrinal statement saying the doctrine of the Catholic Church has evolved. And while we used to think that the death penalty was acceptable, we no longer believe it's acceptable under any circumstances. Whereas Benedict and John Paul had held out the very remote possibility that the death penalty might be maybe not acceptable, but it might absolutely be necessary under certain conditions. Maybe you're in a country where they just simply don't have the ability to keep anybody prisoner for a long time. Maybe you're in the midst of armed conflict where the ability to do trials and do everything with prisoners make it necessary for the death penalty to be used as it has been long used, you know, in situations in military environments. So, a while ago I tried to write out a list of different ways I hear people reacting. But I also want to throw in here, there are cases in the Bible where the death penalty seems to be prescribed. And these Old Testament applications are not directly contradicted in New Testament, as some other Old Testament things are, right? So that's a factor that you sure are going to hear Protestants arguing about. But when you've got a pope and you've got a catechism, there are options for doing things with doctrine in Rome that you might not have in other circumstances. Although a conservative Catholic just wrote me an interesting email that basically said, does the pope have the right to change the catechism? Now, if you read carefully in some of the better stories, you have Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and other people involved. We don't know at this moment the degree to which this was an action of Pope Francis alone, or whether other people in the Vatican went along with it. So let me read you Terry Mattingly's, and I realize I've been rambling on here for quite a while, I wrote down five different reactions I'm seeing. Number one, there is no hard doctrine on the death penalty, so the Pope has this freedom. Number two, the larger doctrine at play here is the defense of life from conception to natural death. So in a clash between the doctrine of the pro-life doctrine that all life is sacred and we don't want to give the state the power to take life unjustly, in many cases, we know that many people are executed for crimes they didn't commit. One of the main things that offended John Paul and Benedict so much. So this viewpoint says we have a doctrine of the death penalty. It's colliding with the doctrine of the defense of life, and the defense of life wins. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Number three, yeah, but. You're hearing people say this is basically just another way to protect liberal Democrats and liberal Catholics. It sets up a scenario, which we've already seen in the past, where you have someone, say, a pro-abortion rights Democrat who's a Catholic, say, look, I'm privately pro-life, but I am strongly against the death penalty. That's the same, or it might even be better, than that Republican over there who says they're anti-abortion, never seems to do much about it, and they're very pro-death penalty. So I'm actually more pro-Pope Francis than they are, or I'm actually a better Catholic than they are. With the Pope actually having now come out with a typical Francis word that's hard to understand, what does inadmissible mean? The death penalty is inadmissible. Is that the same thing as saying the death penalty is now a moral sin? If you back the death penalty, would that potentially block you from Holy Communion the way Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, said it should block you from communion if you publicly support abortion and euthanasia, which he said were settled doctrinal issues, whereas he opposed the death penalty but thought there were maybe some arguments that under extremely rare circumstances you could make a case for it. Or has Francis now put the death penalty on the same level of moral theology as abortion and euthanasia? Then, here's a nice cynical one. I'm sure you thought of this. Oh my gosh, we can't get this Uncle Ted McCarrick story off page one. What are we going to do? Well, we were considering doing away with the death penalty. Let's do it now.
I did think of that one almost immediately.
In other words, wag the dog. We're back to the situation of, you know, Bill Clinton bombing Serbia on Easter morning. Do something to get the story you don't like. Get it off page one. Wag the dog. And number five, some people, including people I really respect, you remember that thing about that number two, the larger doctrine is the defense of life, and that now negates the death penalty. I'm seeing people say that if you look at what Francis is doing on divorce, when you're looking at what some of the liberals in the Catholic Church seem to want him to do with sexuality, at what point, at some moment in history, does a pope say, the larger truth is the dignity of the human person. Thus, our church must change what it believes about sexuality.
That's intriguing. We'll talk more about that on the other side of the break. Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday, August the 2nd. We're talking about media coverage of Pope Francis's declaration against the death penalty in all cases. After our conversation with Terry concludes here in about a half hour, Mark Tooley of the Institute on Religion and Democracy will join us to talk about the Religion News Service interview with six newly elected female bishops in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Western civilization, infant baptism, transgenderism, a legal case for the resurrection, the First Amendment, revisionist history. Your favorite guests will address these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Dallas plays Fort
Worth Knights. Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of Pope Francis' declaration against the death penalty in all cases. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Terry, I have to pick up where you left off there for at least a moment. You had number four as cynical, and number five seemed to be kind of crazy cynical. I mean, that would be the position taken by someone who most definitely does not trust Pope Francis, that this is part of a larger move to set a context or a framework or a precedent for introducing changes on human sexuality.
Well, it's people who don't trust the trends in Catholic academia, and specifically in Catholicism in Europe and some parts of North America. And then you look at things, I mean, really, this upcoming conference, the Vatican Conference on the Family, which is going to have a heavy amount of content about young people and faith, and yet there is a keynote, I don't know if it's a keynote or the keynote, of that conference is going to be delivered by the controversial Jesuit Father James Martin, who would be one of the leading voices and one of the most articulate voices, and I would note a candid voice, on sexuality in the American Catholic Church, and someone that the Catholic right considers just to be totally out of bounds. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of press coverage we get of that. Meanwhile, I think, as I mentioned before on the air here, the head of that conference, Cardinal Farrell, is the former auxiliary bishop of Washington, D.C., serving with his mentor, Theodore McCarrick, and a man who based his episcopal shield of office on the shield of office of McCarrick, and it includes several tributes to his mentor, McCarrick. So this upcoming huge conference, which will have obvious implications for family life, divorce, marriage, sexuality, etc., is being run by people who are not trusted all that much by traditional Catholics as well. So it's in this atmosphere of basic distrust that Francis can release a statement in which he bases a lot of what he had to say, and then this is affirmed by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith as a change in the catechism. And it's possible to argue for this change with extensive quotations from St. Pope John Paul II and Benedict. But then you just have to move one step further from saying, this is something that we oppose, we don't think people should do it, we wish the death penalty was gone, but we can see circumstances where people might make a case for it, exceedingly rare. We oppose it for the following reasons. Then Francis goes one step further and says the death penalty as a strategy in public life is inadmissible, whatever that means. So do you trust Pope Francis to move that piece on the game board one step further than John Paul and Benedict? That's, to some degree, that's what this coverage is all about. And I say that as someone who happens to agree that the death penalty, I buy argument number two, that the larger issue is the defense of human life from conception to natural death. And as the way I've always put it, I've always said that I'm too conservative to give the state the right to make those mistakes, to execute people for crimes they did not commit. And those mistakes will be made. At that point, I would rather see lifetime incarceration, knowing that if new evidence comes out or if something else happens, you have wronged this person horribly, but you have not killed them. So my own personal beliefs fall under the category two that I said. Yet I'm now seeing people say that they believe that the Catholic left and Europe, and they would, some would say Francis, are setting up a similar, the bigger doctrine is the dignity of the human person, and we must not violate people's dignity by the following doctrines on sex, marriage, divorce, etc. Thus, our doctrine has evolved. Now, you said that's an even more cynical option than wag the dog. All I would note is that's exactly the theological line of progression that you have seen in liberal Protestantism. We have a clash between two things the church has always believed. The bigger truth is this. Thus, speaking as the voice of the under the Holy Spirit, in this day and age, the wind blows where it will, we're changing our doctrine to salute a bigger doctrine. Isn't that kind of what you've heard through the years?
Precisely. I hadn't noticed it, but yes, precisely.
So that's the you know, when I write this up, you know, when we post the podcast version of this conversation, I'm going to write up these five options again, and I think we'll see the online debate roll along. Meanwhile, just as journalism, some of the early coverage just like never even mentioned John Paul II or Benedict. This was just hooray for Pope Francis. But the New York Times had extremely valid material from other church officials and from John Paul and Benedict in the story that it had up on its website within 2 or 3 hours. And normally when the Times puts certain ideas in play, the rest of the media notices. Now, of course, the Times also said, oh boy, this is going to be a huge pressure on Republican Catholics who back the death penalty. What are they going to do about it? At which point I would note Joe Biden enthusiastically backs the death penalty. Hillary Clinton backed the death penalty. Barack Obama backed the death penalty. There are other politicians that will face this question as well, especially Catholics. Why is it a bigger thing to throw in the face of pro-life Republicans than of pro-abortion rights I am privately pro-life at home with my door closed or at church in my pew Catholics.
Well, there's a question, and it kind of comes back to where we started and where you said, you know, it coincides with the editorial board of the New York Times, and that means it gets big coverage by the New York Times or the media in general. But why not? Why don't we hear outlets like the New York Times crowing when Pope Francis makes a statement about the sanctity of human life from conception to natural death, which would include the death penalty, but also would definitely include abortion? When he makes pro-life statements, why don't we hear them asking, boy, this is really going to make it hard on all those pro-abortion Democratic
politicians?
No, because
it's not in their editorial interest. It doesn't fit their view of what good religion is. I mean, this is something that's very familiar. People who think that the New York Times or the alleged conspiratorial liberal press, they think it's anti-religion. It's not. The press is not anti-religious. Significant parts of the press, not all of it, but significant and some influential parts of the press are extremely pro some forms of religion and extremely negative about other forms of religion. And that's what I was jokingly saying. Have you ever noticed how much coverage religion get when it agrees with the New York Times editorial page? Because all of a sudden, that's good religion. Bad religion is a religion that we don't like. Frankly, I know a lot of conservatives who do the same thing on other issues related to poverty, spending, military. You know, we can all baptize different parts of our own beliefs and ignore the extremely troubling and complex words of the Christian tradition. We're all capable of that. I'm just noting that with Pope Francis, it's particularly interesting. I mean, he has made some very powerful statements about the sin of people being so selfish that they don't want to have children. He's made comments about that several times in just the last couple of months. I wrote a column about it recently, an on-religion column about his extremely harsh and judgmental words about modern Europe. Well, how much coverage did that get? When he calls, like I said, when he calls the transsexual movement and gender confusion, when he calls that a form of colonialism, forcing the views of the Western secularized world on the global South, how much do we read about that? So we're back into this whole discussion again of why certain religious subjects are covered positively and others are covered negatively. And the trend seems to be that the sexual revolution runs through many, many, many of these issues, and the press is progressive on sexual moral issues. Or perhaps the better way of saying it, for someone would bristle at the word progressive, they're libertarian. The press is morally libertarian and in favor of the radical individualism which tends to be the essence of American life. So I just tried to make a statement there in which I made everybody mad at me for some reason.
Two quick final questions for you, Terry. Gallup has been asking the question, are you in favor of the death penalty for a person convicted of murder for a long time now?
Right.
And it's gone up and down. It reached parity in 1967, and it reached the favor for the death penalty, and answer to that question, reached its peak in about 1992 with 80% of Americans saying they favored it. And it's been going down steadily since near half and half again. Now,
yeah, I haven't looked that up in a long time.
How much does public opinion, I know the Pope isn't swayed by public opinion, much less in the United States, but how much does public opinion play into the way these stories are being reported? About a minute here.
I don't think public opinion matters nearly as much as the opinion in the zip codes that define most of our news. I mean, a small paper out in Nebraska can think whatever it wants on this, but it matters a whole lot more when CNN, the New York Times, and the Washington Post believe a certain way. We have a media system in which some voices are louder than others. I mean, I know from working in newsrooms that people in those newsrooms used to look at the front page of the Sunday New York Times and go, oh my gosh, we got to do a story on that. I mean, that judgment matters.
Finally, then, what kind of follow-up stories should the media be doing on the issue of Pope Francis' statement on the death penalty?
Yeah. One of the things they've got to do right now is find out what else Benedict and John Paul II said. In other words, someone needs, and I've already seen some coverage, not surprisingly, at Crux, a Catholic-specific publication, the actual evolution of the catechism language, and we need to find out in our stories how Benedict and John Paul II qualified their opposition to the death penalty. There is no question that they opposed it. The issue is, how did they qualify that opposition, and what kept them from declaring it a moral wrong, a sin? And is that, in fact, what Francis has done? Once again, what does the word inadmissible mean? Catholics are going to be debating that. Quote them.
One more question occurs to me. Richard John Newhouse often responded to those who criticized pro-lifers and also were in favor of the death penalty by saying that he himself was opposed to the death penalty. However, he wanted to point out that the issue of abortion was of a different caliber than the issue of the death penalty. We're talking about people who are allegedly being punished for crimes, whereas the abortion always punishes the innocent. And I'm wondering whether or not, using that kind of language, the Newhouse language, whether, for all practical purposes, Pope Francis may have raised or increased the caliber of the death penalty as a moral question.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier in our conversation when I said, ultimately, has he pushed the death penalty that far into the defense of life? Has he, I don't know if he has made it morally equal to abortion or euthanasia. Frankly, I don't think he has. But how close has he made it, and does that give enough cover to pro-abortion right Catholics in public life, in America, in teaching positions, faculties, the law, politics, and even theology? That's the debate.
Terry, here's the quote that you had mentioned in passing a moment ago from Pope Francis, and it was made earlier this week. He said this: idols demand a cult and rituals. People bow down before them and sacrifice everything. In antiquity, human sacrifices were made to idols. But even today, people sacrifice their children for their career, neglecting them or simply not generating them. Why have the mainstream media failed to cover this statement earlier this week by Pope Francis?
It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the narrative of the Pope, who wants us to go softer on moral and social issues such as abortion. I mean, but people forget when he made that famous quote about, you know, that perhaps we've overemphasized certain doctrines, and everybody went, oh, the Pope wants us to stop the culture war. The Pope wants us to stop. People forgot that the very next day he spoke at a national pro-life conference in Italy and had very strong stuff to say. The next day. Guess which got covered?
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk with Mark Tooley of the Institute on Religion and Democracy in Washington, D.C., about a religion news service interview with six newly elected female bishops in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Their church is in precipitous decline. They hardly notice. And Mark Tooley says they're just doubling down. We'll find out what he means right after this.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love a true.
the 6th century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Some Bible passages make us more uncomfortable than others. Take, for example, any passage about money. But just because a topic makes us uncomfortable doesn't mean we shouldn't face it head on. That's exactly what the August issue of the Lutheran Witness has done, with articles on poverty, generosity, money management, and more. You won't want to miss it. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC RUCAM. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Risen Savior Lutheran Church, Basser, Kansas. Located just right outside the northwest corner of the Metro Kansas City area. We have a growing congregation of people who come from over 13 different communities to see what God is doing here, who desire to only believe, teach, confess, and practice as the church always has. Risen Savior, Basser, Kansas. Check out our website, risensaviorlcms.org.